Wednesday, January the 8th, State of the Union, was one of those days that you have the feeling that everything that's gone before, the last 2 weeks at any rate, was leading up to, working up to. So must Sir Hillary have felt when he at last reached the top of Mount Everest, because it seemed like to me we had had a long, long rope stretched up a high, high mountain, and day by day we'd been pulling and hauling, and this finally was the day that we either came to the top and fell on our face, or stood up and planted the flag. I arrived a little bit early and took my seat in the front row, flanked on the right by Lucy Baines, and then how glad I was to have Roberta Vinson next, and then Uncle Huffman Baines and his wife Aunt Avalee and Aunt Josepha. That was a sort of, well, I know that Mrs. Johnson would have liked that. Then on the other side, I had Susan and Helen, and nobody watched it with more interest than Helen. Behind us were the wives of the cabinet members and the wives of the Supreme Court. And also as our guests were Hobart Taylor and Jay Taylor. And I noticed tucked away on the farthest step in the last little square inch was Wendy Marcus, young and eager and ready to grab life by the forelock. I'm glad she made it inside the door. The familiar room below began to fill up with the pomp and display that always takes place on these occasions. How many times I've seen it. The House was in its seat. Then with a loud announcement from Fishbait Miller, in came the Senate. Then came the, I think next comes the diplomatic corps, getting bigger all the time, and how they're going to finally find room for them, I don't know. And then the cabinet and the court occupying the front rows. And in his most pontifical voice, Fishbait Miller, and how could there ever be a replacement for Fishbait, rose and said, "The President of the United States." And in walked Lyndon, flanked by old friends of long standing, and went up to the podium right in front of Speaker McCormick and Senator Carl Hayden with the flag behind him. Speaker McCormick, gray and craggy and white-haired. Senator Hayden, here ever since Arizona entered the Union. A charming, lively face for 85. Rather humorous. But I wonder how many people in the chamber were struck with the thought that there is a dramatic something there that says, take care. My favorite line was actually about the first. I will be brief, for our time is necessarily short and our agenda is already long. And then there was a line about, it can be done by this summer. I want it done in order to, so that the House and the Senate will look better to the nation, as much as I want it to be done for Lyndon's good and the Democratic Party's good. By all odds, the most important thing to me in the speech was where he said, this administration here and now declares unconditional war on poverty in America. I asked this Congress and all Americans to join with me in that effort. There was a pretty heavy accent on education, on retraining, on health. I like that line, about $1,000 invested in salvaging an unemployable youth today can return $40,000 or more in his lifetime. I looked around for my weather vane, Dick Russell, and tried to watch his reactions all through it. And in spite of searching for Harry Byrd every time the word budget was mentioned, I couldn't find him. I did notice that the Republican applauding was pretty sparse, but the applauding in general was awfully good, so good that a very short speech, one of the shortest for State of the Union, I think it was designed to be something like 20 minutes, stretched out to a good deal over 20, possibly 30. I watched, too, the press corps, wondering what was going through their minds and coming out soon in their typewriters. Finally, the end, and I could let out that long-drawn breath. Why should it make me so tired? As Lyndon turned around to shake hands with Speaker McCormick and with Senator Hayden, and then with Lou Deschner and all of his old friends as he filed out. Lucy and I, too, walked out into the waiting arms of the ladies of the press, and I hope I made some sense when I said that the speech was a pretty good synthesis of his living and working for the last 30 years, and then quoted the lines that had appealed to me particularly, remembering certainly that one about we must be strong enough to win any war and wise enough to prevent one. About 5:30, we had a meeting over in the family sitting room. Bill Batt of ARA and two of his assistants, Dick Nelson from our office, Liz Carpenter, and Matt Kilduff, to talk about my trip to Pennsylvania on Saturday. They spread out the maps. They gave me a lot of information about the amount of unemployment, why it happened, what ARA was doing about it, the chances of success, the things that I might do, what sounded the most productive. We gave the day a sort of a fine-tooth comb going over, planning what would be the most interesting and illuminating. And I do like to know what I'm getting into and to be well-briefed in everything that's going to happen. So it was worth the almost 2 hours of time that we spent on it. Bill Batt is a pretty impressive character. Big, tall, reliable-looking, former a member of Governor David Lawrence of Pennsylvania's close group. I think it's called a cabinet, and he was the labor member in it.